This is weekday. Moving amongst these green and blooming plants, munching, gleaning, hunting, there are the insects. There are more bugs per pound on this planet than person. And Sue Hubble has been delving into the world of the bug for years, prompted at one point by a query about the difference between a gnat and a midge. The result, in part, is Sue Hubble's book, Broadsides from the Other Orders, A Book of Bugs. Sue Hubble is a writer and beekeeper. Her previous books include A Country Year, about life on her Ozark farm, and A Book of Bees. Sue Hubble joins us this morning on Weekday. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Fun to be here.
Bugs are almost alien to a lot of people. I think people have you actually call it entomophobia,
yeah.
A real word. People just have a phobia about bugs.
Absolutely. There was a survey done a few years back down at University of Arizona, and they found that just a fraction of a single percentage point of people liked bugs, and a huge majority, 90%, I think they said, either disliked them intensely or were had very negative feelings about it. So,
do you think it's natural, or do you think it's
learned? No, I don't. It's in the first place, ours is a particular entomophobic, to use the word, culture. There's a lot of places and at other times when people like bugs, honored them, the creator of the world is sometimes considered a beetle in some cultures. But also, I noticed children don't dislike bugs. They're keenly interested in them, a lot of curiosity about them. Somewhere along the line, children are taught to be afraid of bugs, and you can be untaught, too.
Children love bugs. It's their first entrance into the natural world.
Yeah. So it's a strange thing we do to our children.
What is the difference between a midge and a gnat, by the way?
You sort of have to lose that one once you get down there. They're both common names and used loosely. And it was interesting to me to discover that the Brits do it the other way around. What we call a midge, they call a gnat. What we call a gnat, they call a midge. Yeah, so it doesn't mean much once you start getting down to really investigating the real animals.
Of course, one of the reasons people have that entomophobia, I guess that'll be today's word, is because they bite. And that sometimes you can't see them. You described a story you had, an encounter you had with no see them. So, mm-hmm. So people are afraid of bugs because they do things to us and we can't quite control them.
Yeah, I think that the control thing is really it. Actually, very, very few bugs do us any harm. A really small minority of them. And a lot of them do us some good. Green lacewings, ladybugs, honeybees, those are what we call to human beings beneficial. But the huge majority of bugs are completely indifferent to us.
How did you come to study bugs so intently? Was it through your work with bees?
Yeah, I was a beekeeper, a commercial beekeeper for a long time, and the more you know about bees' physiology and behavior, the better beekeeper you are, and the one thing led to another.
You start out the chapter, one of the first chapters in your book is about going to see butterflies, of course, and those are the bugs that
everybody loves.
Sure,
loves those, yeah.
What was that? What were you looking for when you went up to Wyoming, right, and you were counting butterflies?
It was about this time of year, actually, the Xerxes Society, which is a group interested in man's interrelationship with invertebrates, sponsors a 4th of July butterfly count every year. And they are, it's kind of like the Audubon Society Christmas bird count. They hold these all over this. I'm sure there's one around here. And you go out for a day and just count butterflies. and not only just sheer numbers, but identify the species of what you're looking for.
You write that when you were doing that, after a while, your brain was just clouded with colors and facts, and you just had to sit
down. because I'm not a lepidopterist, a person who specializes in butterflies, and I had a lot of learning to do at the time because I was trying to help the entomologist I was with count, and I had to know what the species were. So it was pretty overwhelming. It was pretty gorgeous too.
In counting them, were you surprised at their numbers? How many?
Yeah, it was in the one that was most overwhelming was in the mountains up in Wyoming, and in alpine climates like that, there are a tremendous number of butterflies because there are a tremendous number of flowers for a very short period of time.
Are they endangered? Are there some butterflies that you were counting that were endangered?
Well, not where we were, but certainly as we destroy habitat, there are specialized kinds of butterflies that are threatened or even made extinct. The Xerxes Society itself was named for the Xerxes blue, which was one that had a very small habitat. It was down near San Francisco and in that area only. And when the area was developed for, I can't remember, what it was, an artillery range or a tank range or something like that, the its habitat was destroyed, and so the Xerxes blue was extinguished from the face of the earth.
We're talking with Sue Hubble about bugs of various kinds. You keep bugs. You keep camel crickets. What are camel
Indeed
crickets?
Indeed, I do. Well, camel crickets are... it's interesting you should say, what is a camel cricket? Because most people do, although they're just found everywhere. They're all over the United States. Even in deserts, you can find camel crickets. They're big. They're inch and a half, sort of a fawn-colored with a humped back, which gives them their common name. But they don't do us any good, and they don't do us any harm, so nobody much pays attention to them. And there's been very, very little scientific work done on them. So when I decided that I wanted to figure out what they were doing, I had to keep them myself and make observations. So I've been keeping them now for 4 years and commuting back and forth between my home in the Ozarks and Washington with sometimes hundreds of camel crickets.
Why are they called camel crickets?
Because of the humped back. It's it looks like a camel's hump.
And you observe them. You write about them in your notebooks, and you keep a track of what they eat and
how
they
look. Yeah, and
do they become people to you, individuals to you?
Kind of. I mean, after all, when you spend 4 years trying to make good conditions for any animal, I think they become sort of a pet after a while.
You went to researching on camel crickets, and you found out there was an expert on camel crickets. But people can make their whole life just one bug, one insect.
Oh, absolutely. Just some aspect of one species. I was talking to a woman last week out in Iowa City who worked on the neurotransmitters in cockroaches' brains.
Do entomologists become are they a particular type of person that becomes an entomologist?
I think they're really neat people. The answer, yeah, they're neat people. There are two kinds of entomologists. The economic entomologists are the people who have, real jobs. They're the ones that work for pesticide companies and are thinking about killing bugs and stuff. But research entomologists, who are the ones that I like, are often academics or connected with some research institution. And just because of the fact that a lot of people are not particularly interested in bugs, and it's considered sort of an arcane profession. And so you've got to do it. You've got to like it to do it. These are people with passions. And I've often found in just sort of the workaday journalism that I do that people with a passion can convey that passion to you, that interest, that intellectual engagement that they have with their subject. And I think they make interesting people.
You write a chapter in your book about what we know as the killer bees. You recall them, you rename them as Bravo bees
because trying very hard.
They're not the myth we have about them, sort of emblematic of what we think about bugs. They're not killers at all.
Yeah. Well, there are people that have died from their stings, but it's no worse than, for instance, the wild bee that we have around here. I found a behavior. I spent 2 weeks working with them down in Guatemala with commercial beekeepers who were using them, and they were a little testier than the hybrid honeybees that people can put right next to their houses around here, but they were no different, in my experience, than the wild bee. I think it's the name. A name's a thing. And they were labeled killer bees. There was a political story about that. The man who brought them to this continent was a famous entomologist working in Brazil who was asked by the Brazilian government to develop a bee that worked better in the tropics. And he was also a human rights activist. And when there was a revolution in Brazil, he was protesting people being put in jail and that kind of thing. And the junta tried to discredit his work because he was so well known. So they label these bees killer bees. This was back late 50s, early 60s, and around that time, Time magazine picked up the name killer bee, and the rest is history, and to the eternal pleasure of headline writers.
some researchers are finding that when they mix them with the strains of bees that are here, they're getting better honey once they learn how to do it right with these kinds of bees.
Well, the kind of honey.
More honey.
In some circumstances. But the most interesting thing to me as a beekeeper is we have a tremendous problem in this country with mites. They're wiping out the bees in a lot of places. My my own home down in Missouri, that was a big fruit growing area, and they're warning fruit growers this year not to expect much of a crop because there's no wild bees left anymore. And these Africanized bees, these Bravo bees, don't have any problems with the mites. And that's very interesting because the only solution to continuing beekeeping in this country is to develop a resistant bee.
Will Bravo bees make it up here on their own or either through science?
Who knows? They haven't been, they've only been in tropical areas before, and the general thinking is that they probably won't be able to withstand cold temperatures, but nobody knows because nobody's had any experience with them.
Are you going to keep studying bugs? Did the passion infect you? Were you bitten?
I guess so, if I can get away with it.
If you can get away with it.
Yeah.
Sue Hubble's book is Broadsides from the Other Orders, A Book of Bugs. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.